Carl, a little dum dum club, where can people hear that?
Guys, if you're in Montreal next week, I will be there with a little dum dum club. And then we're doing, what are we doing? We're in New York, we're in LA, and then we're in Sydney, the Opera House. Nearly sold out, no big deal. And then we're doing a big live one in Northcote, Lawrence Mooney versus Fiona O'Loughlin, where one of them will die. at the Croxton Hotel, and it's selling very well already. It's October 21, I believe.
All right, cool. And Dave?
I've got a new podcast called The Debrief.
Yes.
And where I drive home with a comedian after a gig and we have a chat. And Carl's doing it after this.
Fucking seriously, I couldn't drive you today because I had to fucking get driven home by him after this. So I walked half the way fucking here.
You've got a wedding coming up. You look good.
All right, yeah. We'll be in touch. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Debrief. This is my podcast. It's Dave O'Neill here, where I talk to a comedian straight after a gig, and I've got in my car a legend of podcasting, Carl Chandler, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
From
the Little Dum Dum Club.
Little Dum Dum Club.
Yeah. With my little friend Tommy Daslow.
Yeah, well, we're picking him up. He goes in the booster seat in the back.
And we're actually right near where he used to live.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, in Fitzroy. He lives around here.
Yeah.
But, and we just did Josh Earle's podcast.
Yeah, it's a podcast day.
But you're like a pioneer of podcasting. When did you start the Dum Dum Club? When
was that? Not really, but we started, I don't know, we've been going for about 6 years maybe. I think before, I think we...
You're Australia's Mark Maron. Come on, mate. Yeah. Just don't talk it down.
Yeah, totally. We got in on the ground floor, which helped us a lot, I think. But
you're a pioneer. I just read a book about this. You're a pioneer, and I came in late, so I'm something else. There's another word for me.
Someone that makes money.
No, I'm like a settler or something they call them, because they're like a... But often the pioneers, some of the original pioneers don't do that well because they make all the mistakes and then the dudes come in and just watch them.
Yeah. We got scalped by the Indians. Yeah. We didn't go that well. No, we've just been doing it a long time and now we're starting to reap the benefits of it. But
350 shows?
Yeah, 350 episodes or so, which just means... But, you know, whenever we have an anniversary, people are always, like, congratulating us. But I always just think, man, that's just, you know, 6 years of not having enough on to stop doing a podcast.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I asked you for advice, and you said just keep doing it. Yeah, you've just got to keep doing it.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. For some reason, you know, it's like your serials, your structure for the week is you have this podcast or whatever. If you take that out of the rotation and you skip a couple of weeks, people, you know...
People get pissed off or they go on to something else.
Yeah, there's a million other podcasts, they move on to that. And, you know, if O'Neill skips a couple of weeks, guys at home, please feel free to skip over to the Little Dum Dum Club.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well, though, by what I...
We do all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Considering, you know, you have a lot of famous people then do a podcast and you can get people in off that, but we're a spread bunch of idiots that no one knows. And
But it's made you, it's made you like cult figures in that crowd, hasn't
it? It's helped us a little bit, like from where we were, totally.
Yeah. It's been good.
Yeah.
Because podcasting, there's no gatekeepers.
Well, as was explained to me one day, I have a favourite. I do a little bit of work at the project at Channel 10. So
We've all got stuff going on, mate.
Yeah. So I know you've got a podcast. We get it. So I was working.
I used to write on TV shows. Yeah, I remember that.
I wish I had worked with you on it.
Yeah. Did we ever work on it? No, we worked on Open Slather once.
Briefly for two days. I've been there for 2 days at the very end of it. Great, and they were great episodes.
Great experience. Just having lunch with you was good.
Yeah, it was good. You just came in and go bang bang. All right, someone falls over, someone gets in a car crash, and someone else slips on a banana peel. Oh, I've got to pick the kids up now.
See you later. Yeah, write that up.
So I go and have lunch. My favourite place in South Yarra is a place called Blossom Thai. And I go in there all the time, and I was explaining one day to the owner, to the manager, because I was sitting there having lunch and two people came up and asked for photos with me. And then he's like,
I thought you were just like a labourer.
Exactly. He comes up and goes, what was all that about? Are you famous or something? And I said, no, kind of, not really.
It's like niche.
Well, this is what I said to him. I said, look, I'll try and explain it this way. The majority of people don't know who I am, but the people who do know me really fucking know me.
Yeah.
And he said, you're like the king of Thailand. Because, like, if the King of Thailand walked into the restaurant, he would have got in his hands and knees, but everyone else would have gone,
who's that? This guy. That's fat. You're the King of Thailand.
It ties in with my very, very frequent trips to Thailand, so.
Yeah, you do go there a lot. It's very suspicious, but you are getting married. Not to a Thai person.
I do have a very suspicious-looking passport. There's a lot of Thailand stamps on there, but I swear I go there for the food and the beach.
Yeah, you like it.
I love it. Oh, it's the best.
I've only been to Bangkok. I suppose I got the wrong end of the stick.
Yeah, I've never been to Bangkok.
Oh, you never been to Bangkok?
No, never been.
Just a huge city.
I always go to just islands and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, relax. I don't need to be, you know, I don't need anything.
Does your fiancé go with you sometimes?
Most of the time. Most of the time.
And your parents went one time.
I took my parents twice.
On Malaysian Airlines, is that right?
Yeah. Because they'd never been before. But, like, you know what? I booked them on Malaysian Airlines, and then the very next week, that Malaysian Airlines...
Went
missing. And I went, oh, no, I'm in big trouble here. And I went to ring them and say, and they would have seen the paper and everything. And I rang them and they were sort of like, oh, well, like they'd never been on a plane. So they sort of just assumed that they were going to die on a plane anyway.
Wow, never been on a plane.
They'd never been on a plane before, like 3 years ago.
Yeah, right.
Never been on a plane, let alone overseas. So that was awesome just to watch them react to things
like the hostess, the air hostess.
Oh, my dad didn't sleep on the plane, like didn't trust it. So he just listened to the, like, we get there in the morning and I'm like, do you ever sleep? He's like, no. I'm like, what were you doing all night? He's like, oh, just listening to the engines. It's like, that's 8 hours. How interesting are the engines? And he goes, I said, did you, and I showed him the in-flight entertainment. I said, did you watch that? He goes, oh, I couldn't get it going. So I just watched.
Ask someone.
Yes. He goes, I couldn't get it going, so I just watched one show. And I said, what was it? He goes, you know, the plane show.
Oh, no.
The plane, the map.
GPS thing.
Yeah, yeah. He watched the map.
Fantastic.
For 8 hours.
We're getting closer, sweetheart. Yeah, we're getting closer. Yeah.
Oh, I've nearly clocked this very slowly moving video game.
That's hilarious, because your parents were shopkeepers, weren't they?
Yeah. I grew up I'm a street kid. My mates used to call me a street kid because they had four or five shops when we were growing up, so I just... Or, you know,
you were just going from
school.
Shop to shop.
Yeah, just hanging out down the street.
Did you work
day.
In those shops?
Oh, really, really rarely. Because, like, either I was too young or then I got to an age where I'm like, I don't want to be fucking working in a shop, and, you know, in case my mates walk in or, you know, whatever. But, yeah, so I never really worked in a shop. No.
Oh, yeah, right.
I just hung out at the back.
What sort of shops were they?
They ran in order. Here we go. A deli. Very successful deli, then a shoe shop.
What was the deli called? It's called Maryborough Meats.
Chandler's Deli.
Oh, fantastic.
Chandler's Deli. And it was like a deli and a coffee shop.
Yeah, awesome.
It was like the first sort of modern day coffee shop in Maryborough. Yeah, and it went bananas.
You could sit on a seat and have a cappuccino.
Yeah, exactly. So it went really, really well. And my mum's a very good cook, so my mum and dad went really well off the back of shops because they were sort of actually good at what they
were. How long did Chandler's Deli run for?
Oh, probably 5 years or something. And then it went really gangbusters, and then they sold up and made a big profit and then moved on to the next shop and went really well on that.
And did some idiot take it over? No idea.
Yeah, idiots take over. It goes to the shit and they go, oh, you guys lied about the figures. It's like, no, you fucked it.
Yeah, it happens. We bought in Mugaccinos and no one wanted them.
Yeah.
Focaccias.
No, but it's all about personality with shops as well. So these two arseholes moved in and went, oh, we've been telling every customer to get fucked and everyone's leaving. Like, what's going on?
Yeah,
you
right.
The books here. No.
Right. No, just bad management.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then what did they go to?
Chandler's Shoes.
Fuck. From delis to shoes is a big jump.
There was a whole street full of Chandler's shops by the end. There was Chandler's Shoes, so but not cool shoes. It was all
I know what you mean. It's a functional shoe shop.
Hush puppies and you know, like old people's shoes. Like we were next door to a cool shoe shop. So we were just constantly going next door going, oh, we just want, can't we get Reeboks? Why don't you order Reeboks in? And they're like, no. We're getting dress shoes. We're getting nice shoes.
Yeah, daggy stuff.
Yeah.
And then what?
So then they went back to a coffee shop again.
And what were the...
It was called the Terrace Coffee Corner.
And was Chandler's Deli still open at that stage?
It was. But we were just around the corner, about 50 metres around the corner.
Yeah.
And that was really good again. I once caught a kid shoplifting in there, which was my one bit of work that I ever did in that coffee shop.
Undercover store detective.
I saw him sliding a Mars bar up his sleeve in the reflection on the counter.
Man.
And I stood up and went, that boy has a Mars bar.
Did you know that boy was a small town, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, but he went to another school, so I knew who he was. His nickname was Gemmo.
Gemmo.
I don't remember his name.
Very naughty Gemmo.
Yeah, not good. It stuck with me.
Yeah. And then what?
And then they went to... then they owned the freehold of the shoe shop, which
Oh, they own the building.
Yeah, yeah. So then they had they leased it out to someone who got rid of the shoe shop and then put in his health food shop and then went broke and ran out of town. So they just took back the space again.
Yeah, yeah.
And all and sort of, I think they grabbed all the gear in the, you know, they got all the free gear in there.
Yeah, all the fittings.
And just, yeah, and just kept running the health food shop for a while.
Oh, they went, oh, okay, they took over the health food shop.
Yeah, it just got sort of put in their lap and they're like, all right. And so they ran that for a while. Which is sort of weird.
Because it's normally people that are into health foods run those shops.
Yeah, yeah, very sickly.
Especially in
the 80s. Yeah, there was a very sickly looking person.
Yeah, that'd be
that
right.
He took over from the big rumour was that, I love this, I love, you know those hospital stories that you hear, like a nurse will have all those stories about stuff that's been found in someone's ass. All those stories that go around. Well, the story about this guy before he ran out of town was he ended up in hospital because he was up a ladder and fell down and a broomstick got lodged up his arsehole.
What?
So then we...
What?
That was the story. So I don't know whether that was connected with him running out of town or not.
It'd be hard to run with a broomstick up your bum.
Well, it might have been like a Harry Potter thing. He might have flown over there. So
Potter.
We took over that, which was a bit of a shame for like me and my brother and stuff at that age, because we've been basically in these shops all our lives with access to hot chips, free cans of Coke, free chocolate bars,
yeah.
And then it's like, oh, do you guys want some free seaweed?
Yeah, want some wheat germ.
Yeah, oh, God. So the only thing they would have in there that was worth eating was like, they had a bit of like creamy soda, some sort of healthy creamy soda.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That was about it.
And then what? Was that it? Was that it for the retail experience?
It was the worst one then. Like, it slowly went downhill. You know, you went from all the, you know, the free...
And was this in parallel to Maryborough's economic decline, do you reckon? Or I don't know. If I assume they've had a bit of a decline over the years.
Yeah, they have, but no, not really. I think it was all still okay back
booming,
then. But now
booming.
If I go back there now, it's like there's no one in the main street. But there's a lot of chain stores there. Like, when I grew up, there was no chain stores at all. And now they've got McDonald's, Kmart, KFC, Domino's.
Yeah, it would have always been just local Subway. Chandler's Deli types.
Yeah, yeah, we were the big franchise. You know, Chandler's
right.
Was the franchise back then that got into health food. And
man, they should do a movie on your dad, like the founder, you know?
Yeah.
The Chandler's.
Yeah, the Chandler.
Yeah, the scene with you, catching the kid.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
you can narrate it. It was a landmark moment.
Yeah, but then the worst one. So, like, yeah, we went from getting all, you know, hot chips and stuff to then, you know, going to health food. And then the last shop that they owned, they did Chandler's Rejects. Like the Reject
like
shop.
Oh, the Reject shop.
Off Maryborough, which is horrible. And right at the worst age when I was 16, where everyone's just at school going, yeah, fucking
Reject.
You a reject? Do you come from the shop?
So it was called Chandler's Rejects.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The worst. So sometimes I'd go with my dad down to Melbourne. Big trip down to Melbourne, and you'd go to these weird warehouses where he'd just pick up all the shitty stuff that you buy at
like koala in a can.
Yeah, yeah.
The classic
thing. All that sort of stuff. So,
I remember I met a guy in a cafe, and his dad owned hot potato stores.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hot potatoes. There's like Chandler's Rejects, but a Melbourne version. Yeah, dad owns hot potatoes. But he had a strategy where he would open them in like a shopping strip or a shopping mall for like 3 months and just hit it hard, then leave.
Oh, right.
That was a hot potato strategy, apparently. Yeah, right. You just bang, bang, you hit it quickly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so what did they do after they, were they retiring by that stage? They wouldn't be old enough to retire.
I think I think my mum just got really sick of working in shops.
Shops is hard, yard.
Yeah.
Retail's
like,
hard.
Because this was the thing about my parents. They would go, my dad would go, oh, this is great. I've got a great idea. Right, and just
it's not the ideas, man, you're old man.
Just go and grab a shop and go, great. And then my mum would know what had happened next, which is then my mum goes in and does all the work.
Yeah,
so,
right.
It's like, I've got this great idea, I'm opening this coffee shop. And it's like, yeah, yeah, you've got the great idea of standing out the front talking to fucking whoever while mum's doing all the work.
Yeah, right.
So then after about five or six shops, mum sort of went, nah, I'm not doing this. Where it literally got to the stage where she then went and just got a normal job that she liked doing.
Yeah, right.
And then my dad went and literally, his dream was always to buy a pub in Echuca where he, you know, he grew up as a, until he was fucking 4 years old or something. And so then he bought this pub
and then went,
here we go. Good news, everyone. Good news, Elaine. I just bought a pub in Echuca. And she just goes, no. He's like, oh, no, you'll do it. And she goes, no, I won't. And then she literally wouldn't do it. So all of a sudden he got stuck with a pub. Like, he just thought, oh, she'll go along with it. She refused to. So then he was driving from Maribor up to Echuca to run this fucking pub.
Oh, and running a pub, you've got to be there to run a pub, don't you? That's what I always say, you've got to be there.
Yeah, totally.
People steal money and crap.
Yeah, totally. So then he sort of got fucked over a bit up there and you know.
Man, look at that dude in the overalls. That's a look you could master, I reckon.
Oh, we're in the main street of Hawthorne, man. Yeah, he's got a guy just walked past with corduroy overalls in the rain. That is a great choice. Fuck, he's going to be so soggy in the next 5 metres.
Looks like Andy Pandy. Yeah. Andy Pandy in his overalls?
Yeah.
Overalls are back. You don't have a pair of overalls?
No.
My kids wear overalls.
Yeah, well, your kids should. That's, kids that's are. That's who wears them.
Exactly.
Oh.
Well, so then, so the jump from like being a like you wouldn't have been exposed to much comedy in Maryborough, would you?
No, not at all. No way. I, you know, what was on TV?
TV maybe.
Elliot Goblet and Red Faces, and that was about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you got an inkling for comedy, was that when you moved to Melbourne? You'd studied in Ballarat, didn't you?
I went to uni in Ballarat, and then I moved to Melbourne.
Which was quite common for country kids, wasn't it? You don't go to Melbourne, you go to like a regional uni.
Yeah, a little bit. You know what? I moved to Melbourne. It was like a bit over 10 years ago, and we are about to hit where I got my first job. As soon as I moved here, I got a job, and then I moved here.
What job did you get?
The job's literally 100 metres that way. There was a print shop just there on Glenferrie Road.
Oh, I've been to that print shop.
Yeah, it's gone now.
Yes. But
the guy that ran it that employed me was the worst at his job, and I left just before it all went to shit.
Because my dad was a TAFE teacher at Swinburne here for 30 years after the Air Force.
Right,
and we used to come and work here with him.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he got us all jobs. Everyone that worked there, mum or dad taught at Swinburne. Right.
Oh, my dad, whenever he comes down here, all he'll talk about is, oh, you know what, I had the chance to buy a house here in Hawthorne 30 years ago, and it was only this much.
Yeah,
cool, everyone could have done that.
Yeah, everyone's got that story. Well, my dad's one, he, on Glenferrie Road, there was a coin shop, and he could have bought a 1930 penny.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is worth, oh, it's not a million, it's worth thousands of dollars. Oh, like, a really, mum wouldn't let him buy the 1930 penny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he didn't buy it. He did buy a block of land in Cape Patterson, which is near Phillip Island, for $800. So.
Oh, yeah, great. Well, that's the thing.
That's like, worth, you know, $500,000 now.
Yeah, that's the thing. My old man will still talk about that Hawthorne property. It's like, mate, you bought a beach house in Anglesey for $75,000 and now it's worth fucking heaps. Concentrate on the shit you did.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, a beach house in Anglesey? Yeah. Has he still got it?
Talking about like what you could have bought, it's like fucking talking about your dreams. Oh, yeah. I dreamed I'd fly last night. Who cares?
When I lived in shared housing, we were looking for a house, me and four of my mates from high school, and we went on a tour in Carlton Street, Carlton, opposite the gardens, this amazing terrace house, and he goes, look, boys, I'll sell it to you for $100,000. I can't be fuck renting it to you. I'll sell it to you. And we're all like, oh, none of us have got any money. That house would be worth. See, I've got one of those stories.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah,
right,
I've got
right.
one of those. I'm going to bore my children with that.
Yeah, yeah, but that's a story. It's a story where there was no option for you to buy that house.
No, we couldn't have bought it.
Yeah, well then, yeah, there's it's like, cool, I could have been in the 100 metres in the Olympics if I had been fast enough.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, so that's not a possibility. That's just a shit story.
So then how did you get... So was it in Ballarat Uni that you saw a bit of comedy?
No, man, I had no interest in doing comedy. I moved to Melbourne and...
You're a graphic artist, aren't you?
I was a graphic designer and literally the reason I got into comedy was because one of my mates that moved from Maryborough to Melbourne as well, I used to go around and get drunk with him one night, every Monday night, and we'd watch Champagne Comedy on Channel 31.
Oh my God, you used to appear on that.
Yeah, I used to be on that. But we would get drunk and watch it because it wasn't a very good show.
No.
And so we would watch it for the reason of laughing at it rather than with it.
The guy that ran that had this policy where they put the headliner on first.
Yes.
Then he'd put two middle brackets, so two people doing 10 minutes each that were paid, and then the last bracket was anyone could turn up and do whatever you wanted.
Oh, I'm very well aware, because this is what happened. We would watch it and just laugh. Like, we'd get drunk and just laugh hysterically at how bad it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and that's a very rude thing to do now that you're in comedy or whatever, but...
No, but back then
I was just like, this is so dumb. And then... at the end they'd advertise and go, you can come and watch this live, and we were like, oh, amazing, let's go and watch this live. So me and my mate went there, I reckon, every Monday for like a month, and we'd just go in there and cry laughing, because like you said, the people on TV, they were the good ones. There were people afterwards that were way worse.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we started going along and just watching that, and
there used to go and watch it live,
yeah, and I'd heckle. I got that drunk, I'd started heckling. I was a bad person.
You're a bad audience
member.
Yeah,
totally.
I believe that. Yeah, right. And so then what? So where did you do your first gig? There?
So then I reckon we went there for a month watching it live, and then I got really drunk and I sort of got dared by my mate to do it. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'll do it. Give me 3 months and I'll do it.
Yeah, right.
And give me 3 months' notice. And so then he then went and told all of my friends.
Oh, no.
So that I couldn't get out of it. So then for 3 months I was like, fuck. And so then I just sat down and tried to write jokes for 3 months, and then another mate saw an ad for Raw Comedy, which I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Which is the Triple J ABC
comedy festival competition.
Yeah. For open micers, for new people. So, so then I went and watched one Raw Comedy heat to sort of know how it worked.
Yeah, that's a good idea. If you're thinking of doing comedy, go and watch it beforehand.
Yeah, because I'd only seen three or four shows, so I didn't really know how it worked. So we went and saw that, and we saw some really bad people, opposite. It motivated me more because I'm like, oh, anyone can do this.
Yeah.
Not everyone's Jerry Seinfeld.
No, that's right. That's right.
So we watched some really insane people do it, which made me feel a bit less nervous about it.
I was talking to a girl in a costume shop, and she goes, oh, I want to do stand-up. I'm like, well, go and do it. She goes, oh, but I went and saw Denise Scott, and I saw Dave Hughes at the Comedy Festival, and I said, don't go and see them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously very good, but they've taken a long time to get there.
Yeah.
Go to an open mic night.
Yeah, that's what I say to people as well. Go and see stuff you like and see stuff you don't like as well.
Yeah.
You know what not to do.
Because, and then you'll say, because I remember going to a comedy night in the 80s and just thinking, oh, I'm better than some of these people, and I haven't started comedy yet.
Yeah.
But if you go and see Denise Scott or whatever doing her show, you'll be blown away and go, I can never reach that.
Totally.
But everyone starts the same way.
Yeah, totally.
And so was Raw Comedy your first gig?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't remember you winning Raw. Were you in the Chris Franklin year? Or?
No, I didn't win.
Were you in the Hannah Gadsby year?
Yes.
Were you really?
Yes, I think so.
I was.
Yeah, she won that year.
She was very good too when she won.
Yeah.
I remember her routine. It was very funny.
No, I remember, so I did the heat. I'm sure I've talked about this on our podcast, but I haven't heard this. I did the heat and I was very, very nervous. Like, you know, that nerves of
where
I'm sitting backstage going, physically looking at the window, thinking, can I fit out this window?
Yeah, can I jump out?
Yeah, and because I invited all my mates.
And so I had
like a dozen mates there who were all like literally telling me on the way in, man, if you're good, that'll be funny, but if you're bad, even better, because we're just going to fucking scream at you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. In actuality, it didn't actually work like that because they were more nervous than me in the end. Like, they literally were like, oh, God, is this going to be... You know that really embarrassing thing that the audience members get if someone's bad and they just cringe really badly? But they were part of the story. They were part... You know, they were mates with me. So they were really anxious about it in the end.
Where was it?
It was at the Evelyn Hotel.
No, they still do it there.
Fitzroy. Yeah.
Wow. And so did you get anywhere in the heat or...?
No, I did really well. In my memory was, I did the best on the night. That was my memory. And so I didn't know how things worked. And so I got the most laughs. So I was like,
sorted.
I've won then. And so I remember they go, at the end of the night, they go, all right, we've got two winners and two runners up. And here's the two runners. It might have even been three runners up. And they read out all the runners up. And it's like, I wasn't in there. And it's like, everyone's like, oh, fuck, you've won it. And then they read the two winners out and I wasn't in it. So I wasn't in the top five out of bloody, you know.
Really?
15 or something. But I'd got the most laughs. And then on top of that, I saw later on, not only was I not in the top five, they then put another person through as well.
From that heat as well. Who were the judges, I wonder? Do you remember?
I don't really remember. The MC was Adam Richard, because I did the classic thing that you're not supposed to do, but I didn't really do it, where they say don't approach the judges or don't approach the whatever. But I'd gone so well that I was sort of like, I didn't really care. But I just went up to Adam and sort of went, how does it all work? Because like I felt like I went well. And I wasn't complaining. I was like,
I
was really happy just to have gone well. But I was like, any advice? Like, what? And I remember whoever I approached, Adam and someone else, they got very defensive and like, this guy's going to attack me or whatever. It's the disgruntled Raw entrant sort of thing. And they were like, ooh, back to the wall sort of thing. And I'm like, I'm not going to kill anyone. I just don't understand how it works.
Came up to me at this benefit I did years ago and he said, you are my Raw host and you thought I was funny. You told me you were funny. I went, yeah, I remember you. And he goes, remember I got no laughs. I went, yeah, I remember. And I remember saying to you, you're funny, but this isn't your audience. Do you know his name?
Who?
Tim Minchin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I hosted his Raw... He did a priest character.
Yeah.
And he goes, I always remember because I thought he was hilarious and no one was laughing.
What I love about the whole Raw system is that they'll publicise it and go, the people that have, you know, don't worry if you don't win because here's all the people that didn't win or didn't get anywhere
in
Raw.
Yeah, Tim Minchin,
Dave Hughes.
Yeah, Peter Hellyer,
Dave Thorne. All those guys went nowhere in Raw, so don't worry. And it's like, aren't you just advertising the fact that your judges are shitheads?
Yeah.
That means no one knows what's fucking going on in there.
No, Look, it can be potluck, can't it?
But but the thing was, I wasn't disgruntled or anything because when I finished the gig and I'd gone really well, I walked out and within like 30 seconds, two different girls approached me and went, "Oh, you were great!" And I was like, "Fucking hell, this is awesome!" Yeah,
comedy,
Yeah, because that was literally planned as a one-off gig, and that was it. As soon as I went well, and then two girls come up, I'm like, "Fuck, I'll do this."
Yeah.
Stupid not to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's why I started stand up. Two girls at uni said, "You're funny. You should do stand up."
Right.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah.
You should do it. All right. I think next week I did it.
Great.
But that's interesting. The motivation.
Yeah.
And so then, you just started doing gigs?
Yeah. Then it was the doing gig thing, trying to figure out where gigs were and how it works and whatever. And I remember, you have that, if I don't know if you were the same, you have that initial thing where your mates are excited about you doing stand-up.
Yeah, they come and watch you.
They come along.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember my mates came all to my first gig.
Yeah.
They had a table of them at La Joke sitting there.
Yeah. Well, I remember that.
That lasted about a month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I reckon I did about 5 gigs and then it got to the 6th gig and I was like, yeah, I'm doing this gig. And they're like, we've seen that. We're going to sit at home. I'm like, oh, really? So I'm just going to go by myself? And they're like, yep.
So did you have that thing then when you met your soon-to-be wife? Did she come along to gigs? She must have come to gigs early on and watched you.
We sort of went on our first date to a gig of mine.
Oh, God.
Sort of. But it couldn't have gone better. I reckon at that point, that was probably the best gig I'd ever had.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and someone pulled out, so I was the headliner. And so it looked really good.
Impressive.
On me. I was the headliner and I did really, that was the best gig I've ever had.
You were just some povo prick, but you were actually quite good.
Yeah. So it was very, it was sort of in hindsight.
My wife likes to remind me that I used to do political material, which I can't even remember.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to
get political about burger rings and stuff?
I used to read a golden book, which I changed to the story of the National Party.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I don't think it got many laughs, but certainly got credibility up
great,
there.
Great.
Yeah, that was political.
I'd love to have heard that. Some National Party, some bit of Ian
Chicken
Sinclair.
Little. Ian Sinclair. It would have been Sinclair probably back then.
Wow.
Yeah, the Chicken Little story about Ian Sinclair. Oh, there must have been something in the news. That's
fuck,
why
you weren't doing that at the Comic Slams. That would have been in North Fitzroy somewhere.
Yeah, it would have been at the Comedy Cafe.
Right.
Which is this gig this guy used to run called Ian Diva. It was like, it used to be legendary. Rod Quandoc set it up and then this guy took it over whose other claim to fame was he invented junk mailing. And he had a junk mailing. And so he used to ring up guys like me and go, look, you can do a gig tonight, Saturday night, got a big crowd in. So they used to get office crowds.
That's funny. I'm just looking at a row of no junk mail signs as you're saying that.
And I'm going, great, I'm on tonight. He goes, yeah, you've got 10 minutes, but you have to be the waiter for the rest of the night.
Oh, what?
So you'd go and waiter, and everyone would just be going, give us me pumpkin soup, you dickhead. Where's my nachos? And then the guy would go, all right, we've got a special guest, Dave O'Neill. And he was like, he's the fucking waiter.
And were you getting paid to do the waiting?
No.
Fuck. You kidding? No. You're doing free waitering.
Yeah. I think I did it once and it just went, I am. And you know the other thing that was big back then, this was like the early 90s, hens bus tours.
Yeah, right.
Where you would go on a bus and MC the whole. Hughesy used to do a routine about it. I went on one and went, I'm not doing it, with a guy called Virgil the Virgin. That was his character.
Right.
And he spoke in an American accent, even though he was from Frankston or somewhere. and you would get on the bus and then try and entertain these girls on the bus.
Yep.
But sometimes you get a bucks night. Like Hughesy did a routine about he had to drive to Diamond Creek, which is an outer suburb of Melbourne, and pick up this bus. You'd leave your car there and get on the bus with all these young guys on a bucks night. They've got to get the bus back by 1 a.m. You just end up being like a police officer. You've got to get people back on the bus.
They get
on the bus and the guy goes, we want to go to Macca's. And the bus driver's like, we can't go to Macca's, Hughes. We've got to get the bus back by 2 a.m. We can't go to Macca's. And this big Maori guy stood up and looked me square in the eye and I saw 200 years of hatred. And he goes, we're fucking hungry, mate. He goes, yeah, I think it's Mac time. It was a good routine. Yeah, he did the buses a lot, yeah.
So they don't do that anymore. I remember hearing stories about that.
Yeah, they don't do
that. Sounds like the worst gig of all time.
I'm trying to think of where I first met you.
Me?
Yeah, maybe it was at Spleen.
I don't know. Comedy at Spleen.
I remember meeting Steele and he asked me to come down and do Spleen and then I did Spleen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I might just get something to eat.
Oh, we're going through McDonald's.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, very good. This is the closest McDonald's to my house. So.
Yeah, this is our closest.
It's not a bad McDonald's.
Yeah, you know, we did this on the radio once. People do go to different types of McDonald's. They go different locations do stuff better than other locations.
Yeah.
What do you want? I just want a drink.
No. Oh, yeah, I'll have a drink as well.
What do you want?
I don't want any food. I'm going to America next week, so I'm trying to be good.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want? I'm going to eat shit there.
I just got a large Diet Coke. What do you want?
Yep, anything else?
Medium Coke, please.
Medium Coke.
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm taking a large Diet Coke.
That's right. All right.
Is there any podcast discount?
Thanks.
Yes, just Andrew.
I think that was a yes.
People don't know what podcasting is.
We did a live podcast in a McDonald's one.
Oh, that was right for Nick Cody's birthday. That's fantastic.
And we snuck it in. We had to pretend it was a birthday party.
Yeah, and that you were
that
having
we
speeches.
Were doing speeches to it.
How much is that?
Yeah, we charged people to come in as well, which was very weird. I think people got spooked a bit. But I'd like to know the official line from McDonald's on the fact we were charging people to come into their party room
in
Richmond.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.
We should try it again. I remember doing that show and our numbers were really good, and then the numbers were not as good to come to the McDonald's because people just went, why the fuck would we pay to go to McDonald's?
Yeah, in the party room? Were you in the party room?
Yeah, in the party room.
Do you want a cup tray?
No, I have a straw though. That'd be great.
Wow. Guys at home, it's a real McDonald's experience. This is actually happening.
Thanks.
No, we paid someone to give us McDonald's.
Thanks very much. All right.
This is a cameo actor there.
Yeah, that's an actor. Professional. Yep. She's on Home and Away normally. but I remember talking to you about music, because you're a big music fan.
Oh, well, I guess everyone is, but yeah.
No, they're not. No? I'm surprised by the amount of comedians. Well, maybe it's my generation, but the amount of comedians who just bought Phil Collins' No Jacket Required and left it at that.
Oh, right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, all my generation of comics, they're not that many of them into music.
Well, we just did Josh Earle's podcast, and Josh Earle is someone that is very much, is I would say, too into music. Because
he likes bands I've never heard of.
Yeah, yeah. He keeps up with the current trends, which I reckon once you hit a certain age, you go, that's actually a little bit weird. Because, you know, you can, I know it's a bit sad when your tastes are stuck back with Real Big Fish and, you know, Limp Bizkit or something. But if you keep getting all the new music, you're just Molly Meldrum, and that's just weird.
Yeah, but he's obviously, he would have been in bands. Surely he loved being in bands.
Josh?
Yeah, surely.
Was he in a band? I'm not sure if he was.
He should have been in a band.
Yeah, I
should have been in a band. I was in a band. Get out of your system. Yeah, you just end up carrying equipment. It's worse than stand-up, being in a band. And making no money. So at least when you start in comedy, you might get $120 to a gig. You have to split that five ways in a band.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just battling egos and stuff like that. Now, I think, because you're a big Elvis Costello fan.
Yes.
So am I.
Yeah, massive. Once I found something I liked, I got really tragically into it. So, I got every one of his albums.
Well, even the latest ones?
Yeah, yeah. Kept going. Even
the String Quartet?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Wow.
String Quartet, that was a good album. He's
yeah, that's what I've heard.
That. I'm that way if you're that way. That way.
Yeah.
With the Kronos Quartet, that's a good album. That was one of the first albums I bought of his. And I was into that album when I was 17. I liked it.
That's amazing.
But,
because the tragic story is, I've been over this with you before, is that you won tickets to see Elvis Costello.
That's how I got into him. I sat up one night, I was watching the 1990 World Cup finals from Italy, and to get to it, there was a big Rage special and they played every single of Elvis Costello. And I was like, fuck, this is great. And that was all promoting the album Mighty Like a Rose. And then 3CV, the local radio station in Country Victoria, that's 3CV, Country Victoria, they ran a competition to give away tickets and an album. And I'm pretty sure I was the only person that entered. So I got the album and I got free tickets to like the tennis center. I live there if you want to go there.
Oh, yeah.
So I won them. And then I was like, great. And, you know, I'm 16 or something at the time. And so I've got these tennis center tickets.
And you put them on the fridge?
I put them on the fridge and it was like, right,
and
great.
And so that would have been, what tour was that? Was it the Confederates? No.
Yeah, no, the Rude Five.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I didn't go to that
so
one.
So it was Mighty Like a Rose.
Are you in these big new apartments?
Yeah.
This is where you live?
Yeah.
This is like a North Korean block.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. And so then I, on the day of the show, I was like all gearing up for it. And then my dad just goes, yeah, we're not going to go. How about I just take you next time? Or, you know, we do something else. So I'm like, no, but now I've got no other way of doing it. He's like, nah, we'll just, you know, he'll be back. He'll be back another time.
That,
like,
that blows me away.
And then from then on,
that inspires me to be a better father.
Yeah, from then on, then I got really obsessed with him. And then he didn't come out
for
12 years or something.
Yeah, that's right.
It was insane. Like, it was always like, next album, he might come. Nah. I just never saw him.
So were you really upset when your dad said that?
I was more upset later when I just didn't see him after I got really obsessed with him. And I just never saw him for every next tour. And I still had the tickets on the top of the fridge and I'd just remind my dad about it.
I think about that when my kids want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, don't be Carl Chandler's dad.
Yeah, but you don't know. I mean, you know, like...
It was a different time back then.
You telling your kids that you won't take them to see Minions is probably going to be a little bit different for...
Yeah, then...
They're not going to be a 30-year-old obsessed with Minions still, probably.
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. Also, thanks to CoinJar. Set up a CoinJar account to buy and sell Bitcoin. It's really, really easy. No, trust me, it is. Just go to nearly.com.au/thedebrief to get a bonus when you set up your account. And Homie, they're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address? And of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homie.com.au. Okay, back to the program. You're back on The Debrief with podcasting legend Carl Chandler. I'm an emerging podcast. He's an established podcast.
This is like, you'll get the hang of it.
This is like the time when Neil Mitchell, who's a big radio guy in Melbourne, had John Fain on from the ABC, who's his competitor. And Neil Mitchell had him on as a guest and said, "Welcome to an audience." It's like, no need to be like that.
Yeah.
So you can say that to me when I go on your podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, because it is The Debrief, I've got a few questions. So what went well today at the gig? And why?
So we're at the live podcast with Josh Hill. What's it called, Ian? Don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
Yep. What went well? Everything went well. It was good. It was a good vibe.
You should have tuned in and have a listen to that one with me.
Me, you, Mike Goldstein and Adam Rosenbach, and Josh Earle's the host.
Yeah.
I don't know why he doesn't book women on his podcast, but that's up to Josh, you know, whatever.
Women in comedy.
Yeah. It was very good, and the audience were very, very lovely, and it was a very small, it was a good comedy room in that it was a very compact room. It was full, and they were big laughers, and a lot of funny people being very funny. What didn't go well? I reckon it all went very well. I started talking about how fat Dry Singer is,
and they turned on you. Yeah, which has been a trope of yours in the Dum Dum.
I think people are just over. I think we've done all the jokes now. I think we've done them all. I think we're done.
Imagine if you lost a really lot of weight and then became unfunny. You know, it'd be one of those legendary stories.
Yeah.
He loses 20 kilos and people go, "He's just not that fun." No, I don't get it. He's just lost the funniness.
Totally. Oh, that could happen. Totally.
Oh, it could happen.
Yeah. Oh, well, it could. He's not going to lose his funniness. Like I said, they'll probably cut it out. But I had dinner with him the other night and he ate 2.5 main meals. I thought you were on some sort of weight loss program.
It's just because he stopped drinking, he's probably... Someone told me drinking a beer is like eating a donut the other day. So.
Well, he said to me, and he has done a good job where he has lost a bunch of weight, but I don't think he's going to lose any more, like the way he's eating. But he said to me when he started, stopped drinking, people go, "Oh, when you stop drinking, you'll just, all of it will just glide off you." But what he said was, instead of having a big night out, he would go, "All right, get to the end of the gig, and then he'd go home and get a full punnet of ice cream on the way home and sit there and eat the full punnet. So that's your replacement for having half a dozen beers.
Was it what you expected today, or did it not turn out like you expected?
That's
question three.
No, it was better than I thought. Because
true.
They were a very generous crowd, and you and all the guests were being very funny. I felt like we all did very well.
I asked about your baby, which is...
I don't have a baby.
You don't have a baby.
I don't have a baby. Yeah. But people thought that was funny. just find the concept of me having a kid very funny, I think.
Yeah, I know. It is. It is funny. Yeah. You might. You never know. Were there any organisational things that got in the way of today? That's question four.
Organisational.
Yeah,
no, the only thing was we had to wait a little while for you to turn up. I think that was it. The audience was sitting there for a while, but you
were... I can't believe they were all there early.
You were busy doing a plumber's convention in Ararat or something.
Yeah, no. Morning, so. I had play dates and kids' parties and crap. I wasn't performing at them.
We started at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. You had three corporates before you had to come from there.
It'd generally be a footy club on a Sunday. Cryo footy club, I did it the other week.
Oh, yeah? How'd it go?
Oh, yeah. No, seriously, the guy rings you up and he goes, "Ah, there's only 30 people here." They had Nick Riewoldt and his cousin, Jack.
Oh, what?
I know, they got 30 people there. Jeez. I'm like, those guys, don't, and he goes, oh, yeah, plus you. I said, don't worry about me. Got Nick Riewoldt, one of the, he's an AFL legend for people that don't know.
Yeah.
And they obviously just didn't get the word out.
Two big AFL legends.
Yeah,
two current players, two star forwards.
And there was 30 people there. And I said to the guy, I'll turn around and go home and just keep the money. No, you got to turn up.
Right.
So it was okay.
But that's it. That's like, I took a photo once. You know, you can have big names on, but if you print out one poster and stick it at the bottom of a fish tank and put it in the basement, then no one's coming.
It can't be a secret.
I saw someone put up a poster once. I took a picture of it. Still on my phone. I don't know why I hung onto it, but I was just fascinated by it. Someone put like a printed poster saying comedy, fundraiser, blah, 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 for, you know, such and such cause. And then someone had borrowed in the top corner in about like 5 point, if you're typing it out, someone had borrowed with Will Anderson. It's like, I don't reckon you're going to get a big crowd to that. You should, but you're not going to.
Should put his name in big letters.
Yeah, there was like one poster up.
How can we do better next time, Carl?
I don't think we can. I think we
achieved it.
You know, I think the only thing we can do better next time is not think about how good we were today, because it will just depress us and we won't be able to concentrate.
Now we can play a song. We should play Elvis Costello, because, you know, I love Elvis Costello. What
you
song?
You get to play whatever you want.
Yeah. You should do this for the Dum Dum. There's some deal you can get, and it's very cheap, and you can play any song.
Really? We should look into that, because our theme song is someone else's song that we have never got permission for.
I thought Tommy Daslow made that on his computer.
No. That's a famous song. That's a big name song that we just, at the start of our podcast, because we didn't know we were going to do 350 episodes. We thought we'd probably do six. So he just put a song that I'd never even heard, and then we've just kept doing it. And we do not own that song. We do not have permission for that song.
Oh,
we would get in a lot of trouble.
It sounds a bit experimental, or...
I don't even want to say the name of the artist, because we'll get in trouble, maybe.
But, can we play that song now, and then finally get paid?
Play it.
What Elvis Costello song should we play?
What should we play?
What's your favourite album?
Get Happy.
Get Happy's a great album.
You know, speaking about Dilruk Joy Singh, I've just introduced him to Elvis Costello because he's heard the references so many times. So he's listening to This Year's Model at the moment,
great.
Which I think is the easiest one to get into first. It's a great
Imperial album. Imperial Bedroom is my favourite album.
Get Happy. I think Get Happy is just like 20 tracks of gold. There's no weak link. It's excellent.
What's on that? Just remind me.
There's like Secondary Modern, there's Love for Tender, there's...
Because I went to Elvis Costello... My brother was in, he would have been in, no, he was an apprentice by this stage, a telecom apprentice, and I reckon I was in year 11, and he had a spare ticket, none of his mates wanted to go, because my brother used to spray paint Elvis Costello lyrics around Mitcham.
Oh, no.
Like, they say, I've got no respect, but everything means less than zero.
Oh, man, that's giving me horrible flashbacks to me at 15, 16 years old and writing down lyrics in a notebook. Yuck. Ugh.
We used to put them on the public record.
Yuck.
And, so he had only one other ticket, and so I've got a twin, and so we both wanted to go. And he goes, and we went to the Palais, and it was back in those days, we did the old, one of us walked in, we were twins.
Yeah.
And so we did some twin trick and both got in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he went through with a ticket, and then I came straight to the door in the same jacket and went, yeah, you just let me in. I just went, the guy goes, what? I did too. You're not, what? And then I got in.
Oh, great.
And there was a spare seat, but that was around the time of the Imperial Bedroom album.
Right. Oh, great.
So what, anyway, what song should we play?
Just find a song off Get Happy.
Well, what are the songs on Get Happy? I can't even remember. That's after This Year's Model, isn't it? Is that after This Year's Model?
Yeah. It's like his fourth album. Miami's True, This Year's Model, Armed Forces, Get Happy.
Oh, okay. So Armed Forces was a massive album. They had Allison and...
No, he had Oliver's Army.
Oliver's Army, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Get Happy was him playing a lot of Motown songs.
That's right.
Motown-styled songs. I Can't Stand It for Falling Down cover, Sam and Dave cover.
Yeah.
You know what? Play High Fidelity.
Oh, it's a great song.
Great song.
Wow, he wrote it after that movie, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. Inspired by John Cusack, yeah.
He got in a time machine.
No, but that was, you know, because High Fidelity is by, what's the author's
Fidelity.
Name again?
Nick Hornby.
He's a tragic Elvis Costello fan. You can tell, because that's the great David Lee Roth quote about Elvis Costello. Music reviewers love Elvis Costello because they look like Elvis Costello.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know, one of my friends wrote to Nick Hornby and he wrote back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wrote back.
Nick Hornby wrote that book 20 Records or something like that.
Yeah.
What was it called? Something like that.
Yeah.
and he wrote 20, you know, his 20 favourite, made a book of it. Mm. And he wrote about singles or whatever, and one of them was my old mates, the Avalanches.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought that was really cool.
That's cool.
One of his chapters was about Frontier Psychiatrist, I think, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it about a boy based on you, or?
Yeah, that's it. Everything's basically based on me.
People from Maryborough. They call me just love people from Maryborough.
Yeah.
He's writing a book about that basketball that you followed around.
He's writing a book about Chandler's Deli at the moment, actually.
Chandler's Deli. That'd be a great sitcom. Welcome to Chandler's Deli.
Fuck. I'd love to write a conventional sitcom like that.
One of those ones
where it's in a hotel or a shop where you've got all the different characters coming through.
That'd be awesome.
Write the new reboot, Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers is a great sitcom.
Oh, the best.
All right. Carl Chandler. Of course, people can find you at the Dum Dum Podcast.
Yeah. Dum Dum Club. Little Dum Dum Club Podcast.
Little Dum Dum Club.
It's just below your podcast on the iTunes charts at the moment, or just above.
Yeah.
We're pretty neck and neck at the moment.
I was 38 and you were 37. Or was that? Yeah, something like that.
Around there.
Yeah, I can't believe with 50 downloads I'm that high. You're in the thousands.
Well, you know what? Hopefully, and this is going to be totally a weird brag, but who was it? Someone, Nick Kappa had a podcast.
Yeah, The Road to Nowhere.
Yeah. So he has
good
guests.
Good friend of mine.
He has guests on
my
there.
My apprentice.
He had a bunch of guests on there and he said, man, I don't know why, but your episode is the one with the most downloads. And we had Arnie Donner on and whatever. And I was like, wow, it must be just the Dum Dum Collective getting into it.
Yeah,
so,
good. They want to see another side to you, you see.
Yeah.
See, when you're on the Dum Dum Club, you put up a wall. There's a wall there.
Well, we're hosting. You know what? Like today's gig, I enjoyed it because you get to be a guest. I don't get to be a guest.
Yeah.
You can come in and just spike things instead of setting them up or whatever.
It's like occasionally you see Don Lane as a guest on someone else's show.
Yeah.
It's a popular reference, current.
Yeah.
Current reference.
That's it. That's what people want to hear. They want to see Letterman as a guest, and that's what they do when they listen to an episode with
that's
me
true.
As a guest.
I'd love to see Letterman
exactly
as a guest.
Exactly the same thing.
I'd love to see Letterman as a guest.
I am the Letterman of comedy.
Where's Paul Schaefer?
You're Paul Schaefer in this thing. It's like Schaefer's hosting The Late Show, and I'm Letterman's on the keyboards.
Who's Tommy Desolo, the guy in the deli?
Rupert G. I met him.
You met Rupert G?
Yeah. I shook his hand. I met him. I got a photo with him. I went and bought a T-shirt from him. I met Pat Farmer off the Late Show as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I just remember watching. I just thought Letterman was so good.
Oh.
Occasionally.
Again, I was obsessed with him.
Oh, were you? Yeah, because he used to be on Channel 9 like at 10 o'clock at night, didn't it? Or 11 o'clock at night.
When I went to uni, I watched every episode of Letterman for 3 years. I missed about one or two episodes, and I told someone that once, like lately, just before he retired. And
then
for some reason, they went and told all these media people. And then I was getting people ringing me up going, do you want to make a statement on the Letterman thing?
Because you and Tony Martin.
We've heard that you've watched every episode for 20 years. I'm like, that's absolutely not true.
I just remember he had some record producer and actor, and the record producer was bragging. He goes, yeah, I went up to Michael Jackson's ranch and worked with him on a record. And Letterman goes, oh, Michael Jackson, great. Did you ask him the question we all want to ask him? And he goes, no, what was that? And he goes, what's wrong with you? Stuff like that. Anyway, what's wrong with you? Anyway, it's been Dave O'Neill on The Debrief, and thanks, Carl Chandler.
Yeah.
Cool. Podcasting, you should get into it, Carl.
Okay.
It's easy to do. Look into it.
I'll look into it.